Ankle stuff, you know, obviously first, you know, when you get back out there, it's still tender, but at the same time, you know, so hopefully nobody touches it. And somebody does, you know, it flares up. So unfortunately, you know, it's a game of football. It's 100% injury rate, unfortunately. So, you know, there's going to be things that always happen.
In the short time that Hundley did play Thursday, he led the Packers on a 14-play touchdown drive to start things off.
I thought it went well, really well. I had some fun out there. We made some good drives, had some good drives, and set some things up.
Packers are practicing today, including wide receiver Jordy Nelson. I'll have more from Titletown later on the Wisconsin Radio Network.
Mike MC Hammer Clemens is on his way back to Green Bay for that exciting Packers practice. It is 16 minutes until 10 o'clock on your Thank God It's Monday Morning. Want to remind you that we've got more high school football coming your way this Friday night as Case tries to bounce back after their loss at Burlington. They host Waterford this Friday. The kickoff is at 7 o'clock. The pregame here on WRJN with Dick Graceffin, Bob Evans is at 6:45. High school football on your radio, friend, is brought to you by Victory Lane Car Wash, Ling Sitco and Racine, the Racine Family YMCAs, and the Docks on the Fox Waterfront Bar and Grill in Waterford. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, Glenn Klein, and he is local civil rights leader and the author of The Only One in the Room. Please welcome back to WRJN, Mr. Milton Thompson. Hello, Milt.
Hello.
Did you ever hear of Mercury Retrograde?
No, I have to say I've never heard of Mercury Retrograde.
Well, you'll never be able to say that again.
Not four times fast, no.
Or ever again that you never had heard of it, because now you did. Yeah. It's an amazing phenomenon. And it's just like with the full moon, when we get the high tide. And It seems like the beautiful humans that have maybe a little bit more water in their system, because just like the Earth, we're 70% water. And maybe if you got 71 or 72% liquid, you're a little bit off sometimes during the full moon. So this Mercury retrograde is a very real phenomenon. And you'll see it in the next several weeks. You'll be like, what? And, oh, yeah, it's Mercury retrograde.
Okay.
It's time to chill. It's time to reflect.
Time to drink less water.
No, that's only on the full moon. You know, drinking water is always a good thing because then it comes out, you see, and then we take the toxins out of us.
Okay.
I'm trying to get rid of the toxins of our society, especially racism. See what I just did there?
Oh, that was a good segue.
That's why I get the big bucks here. So this is ongoing. Right now, we just had a news conference in Milwaukee about the violence and the shooting that occurred there last week. They're not going to release the video, apparently, immediately at least. Mm-hmm. They said it's just one part of the investigation. I don't know why they wouldn't release the video, but they do. Go ahead.
I think transparency is always the best tack to take, even if it's inconclusive, because if you don't release the video, people that are prone to think that the police are hiding something, it gives them fodder to continue that conversation.
And one would think that, given the tension that still exists in Sherman Park there, that they'd want to tamp that down with saying, here's what actually happened, here's why the officer had to draw his gun and shoot this kid.
Right.
So, well, we'll see how that goes. One of the interesting new developments is that Donald J. Trump is now reaching out to the African-American community. This is something, in the kind of way he did especially, is very unique in Republican circles.
Right.
You never saw John McCain do it directly. You never saw Mitt Romney do it. You never saw George W. Bush really do it. And their numbers reflect that. I want to play for you Trump's quotes about the African-American community that happened last week on the stump. But before I do, I want to ask you, as I know you're a Republican, one of the rare breed of African-American Republicans.
One of the only ones in the room.
Yeah. One of the only ones in the room that way, too. But how damaging has it been to the African-American community to be so co-opted by the Democratic Party?
Well, it really has been damaging, because I believe that the Democratic Party really takes the African-American vote for granted. When they go into an election, they pretty much know they've got money in their pocket. In other words, the African-American vote. They have to work hard for the Hispanic vote, because the Hispanic vote will diversify itself both nationally and regionally. So But for African Americans, I think it leads to not being taken seriously, not having our issues don't have prominence with the Democratic Party. The rhetoric works. All they have to do is tell us that, like Joe Biden did a year or longer ago, where he was with a group of African Americans, and he said concerning the Republicans, if they get elected, they're going to put y'all people back in chains. Think of how over the top that rhetoric was, and they should have thrown him out of the room, but they didn't. It was like throwing meat to a hungry lion. You know, he knew he could get away with it. So, yes, I believe that African Americans, we're an intelligent people, but I believe when it comes to our political predispositions, we're too monolithic. And as a result of that, we don't make the two parties work for our vote.
Well, you know, I'm Jewish, and it's not as high as the African American vote in Democratic political circles, but a huge majority of Jewish people, generally speaking, vote Democratic as well. And I wonder what it is about the two communities that we hail from that is the case.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's more perception than reality, because when you look at the unemployment rate for African Americans, when you look at, I looked at a Pew Research study on income variance between whites and blacks, and the median income difference is $23,000 between blacks and whites. And then when you factor in education, it's the same. There's still that gap. So I think there's a perception that we do better with Democrats in charge. But the reality, when you look at the economic data, doesn't bear that out at all. It's inverse, if you will.
He's Milton Thompson. He is the author of The Only One in the Room, A Lifetime of Observations on Race. This is Glenn Klein on WRJN's Community Conversation. I'm so happy that you've got the time to come in and to continue this conversation. It's not just a one-shot deal for us. This is going to be ongoing.
Right.
And I think that we need to continue it nationally, because it is undergirding our entire fabric of society, this issue of race. And it's not going anywhere. It's gotten worse under the first African-American president. Why do you think that is?
You know, I'm a little baffled by it. I think that he's walked on eggshells where the issue of race is concerned, in some instances where I wish he would have intervened more and then gotten involved in some situations that cost him credibility, the beer summit being
right off
the
get-go,
where
he blamed the Cambridge police officers without having any idea what happened for being quote unquote stupid or acting stupidly. And then he had the beer summit.
Right. And I think that he, because he has the bully pulpit, or, you know, has had it for a number of years, he could have talked about race without being prompted by circumstances like Trayvon Martin and others, where obviously he has feelings about that, and rightly so. But I think he could have been the educator in chief when it came to the topic of race. What is it like to be a black man in the highest office of power in the United States? What dynamics are there? And I think he could have educated the country on some of those things, and chose not to.
And when he seemingly almost solely would voice his opinion when something like Trayvon Martin happened, or Michael Brown in Ferguson, and then ignored situations like happened to Kate Steinle in with being murdered by an illegal immigrant,
mm-hmm,
who had been found guilty of a number of crimes. He never said anything about that. He never reached out to their family. When you have that kind of disparity in approach, I think that that caused a bigger schism in the society between white Americans and African Americans that did not need to be.
Right. I think by looking at all circumstances, and the Kate Steinle is a great example, if you're the first African-American You almost have to bend over backwards to make sure that you are perceived as the president of all Americans. And to miss opportunities like that sort of skews the perception of some Americans that you are representing only one group as opposed to another. And it's a shame that that happened.
He's Mill Thompson. He is the author of The Only One in the Room, A Lifetime of Observations on Race. This is your radio friends, WRJN Community Conversation for a Thank God It's Monday Morning. So speaking of speaking only to one segment of the community, Donald J. Trump has almost exclusively spoken to white people. Mm-hmm. But now as he's making this pivot that I referenced at the opening monologue, he's now at least addressing the issues of African Americans. And here's how it sounded last week, and I want to get Milt's take on that. Here is the Republican nominee for President of the United States.
I'd like to address an issue of great and very deep personal importance to me. No group in America has been more harmed by Hillary Clinton's policies than African Americans. If Hillary Clinton's goal was to inflict pain on the African American community, she could not have done a better job. We reject the bigotry of Hillary Clinton, who sees people of color only as votes, not as human beings worthy of a better future. Hillary Clinton would rather provide a job to a refugee from overseas than to give that job to unemployed African-American youth in cities like Detroit who have become refugees in their own country. What do you have to lose? You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
All right, so what the hell do you have to lose, Milton Thompson?
Oh, wow. You know, it's funny. I once had a conversation with Paul Ryan some years ago about the need for Republicans to step up and to address the issue of race head on, not to be nuanced about it, not to use code words that, you know, depend upon the hearer to translate what you're saying. And Republicans have been notoriously hesitant to talk about race head on. So to be honest with you, I've got to at least give him kudos to, you know, the rhetoric's a little over the top, but to at least speak directly to African Americans about some of these issues.
But the vast majority of African Americans are not living in poverty.
That's true.
Four out of ten.
Relatively, that's true. But again, when you look at the data, even if they're not living in poverty, they're lagging significantly behind whites, even whites who have the same educational levels, whether it's whites that have a high school diploma or whites who have a PhD. African Americans consistently lag behind. So even if we're not living in poverty, we're living in relative disparity to people who are no more educated than we are, and who work at the same level of professional. So I understand what you're saying, but I guess, and in the book, I address that. I look at the wealth gap as being more telling of the political, what the real issue needs to be for African Americans. It needs to be opportunity. It's not just, are we living in poverty? It's, do we really have access to the same level of opportunities that we would if we were white and if we were just as industrious as we are, just as educated as we are, in the same professions that we are? And my answer to that would be no.
Why is that?
You know, I have really thought about that for a long period of time. It's easy to blame everything on racism and discrimination. However, I will tell you this, and my career has been in education. So let me speak to that for just a second. As one of the few black superintendents in the state of Wisconsin, and knowing that very few qualified school administrators who are principals and others get any interviews or get interviews to even walk through the door to get an interview as a superintendent. I don't know why that is, but it's very telling to me that out of 424 district administrators, only two are black. So there has to be an underlying attitude. There has to be a hesitancy. It's not a conspiracy, but on the part of school boards and others, not to think in terms of, even though their mission statements say we believe in diversity, not at least reaching out and giving these people an opportunity. So I think there's something endemic that's almost baked into the cake of our society when it comes to significantly giving African Americans an opportunity. One personal thing is this. I have a kid who just graduated from Parkside, has his bachelor's degree in criminal justice, had a great grade point average. He's applying to police station or to police departments and sheriff's departments. He's not getting interviews. He's not getting any play. And he's one of the brightest kids I know. He reads law books in his spare time. You know, so my concern is at that level, not just at the are you in poverty or not in poverty. You know, blacks have been around long enough. Poverty or not in poverty shouldn't be an issue for us. It should be, are we at the highest levels of the corporate ladder? Are we at the highest levels of the local political matter? That should be the question and the issue for us.
Well, I want to dig on this deeper coming up after the news. We're just getting started. And I don't mean, just mean today, beautiful humans. I mean on this ongoing conversation, we have got to be part of the solution.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, a Magnum.media station.
And on this, thank God it's Monday morning, we will continue to do so after WRJN covers the world at 10:01.
Transgender toilets, Louisiana floods. I'm Evan Haining. A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Obama.
Rolling Stones, little sympathy for the devil action on your thank God it's Monday. This is Glenn Clyde. It is 16 minutes after 10 o'clock. I'm in the studio with our new friend Milton Thompson. He is the author of the book, The Only One in the Room, A Lifetime of Observations on Race. So before the break, Milt, we were talking about why African Americans may be lagging behind in, as you say, the wealth gap. Not only do they have a higher representation in the poverty rate, percentage-wise represented in the community, but also amongst wealthy people as
True.
Well, with the same education, the same drive. And so we've got to start peeling this onion back layer by layer. Why do you think it is? I mean, what have you come to? Obviously, there's no way to prove this, but we have to be able to talk about it openly. Famously, the general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Al Campanis, who lost his job by saying that the black man did not have the ability to be a manager in baseball. They did not have the mental capacity.
Wow.
To do that. Do you remember that happening?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, that's really an outrageous statement, but that was pervasive in the society at the time. And yet we see people being held back. It can't just be because of racism.
See, that I'm not sure of, because when you think about it, in order to... There's overt racism. So let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's pretend that blacks are in charge and whites are subservient.
Here's why I say this. It can't just be race. Obviously, the race is
right.
Because we wouldn't have an African-American president. If it was strictly racism that held the African-American community back, it could be. It is racism. It could be the historic nature. We touched on it last week,
right,
about how the African-American community, generally speaking, came into this country. And obviously, we are all impacted by our genetics. You talked about, I thought it was very interesting, that when our ancestors, other than those in the African-American community, came to the United States, they brought with them a pioneer entrepreneurial attitude. And obviously some Africans would have had that same or did have that same attitude,
right,
but not all of them. And 100% of the initial Africans that came to this country came as slaves. They were forced to come.
Right. What benefit would it have been to come up with, what if a slave had come up with the cotton gin? You know, what benefit would it have been to be entrepreneurial and creative and inventive, given the fact that that you're a slave? So, I've pondered many of these things throughout my lifetime. The whole thing of why, when you talked about the manager of the Dodgers, remember, about the same time and maybe a little earlier, there were no black NFL coaches either.
Right.
Same mentality. They're not smart enough. They're not bright enough to be in those positions. Now, here's what's interesting, though, and it ties to the opportunity or what the underlying thing may be. How many blacks are there who are general managers in the NFL, who are in the highest executive positions? Now, Ozzie Newsome comes to mind of the Baltimore Ravens. But when you look at that, the conversation that we need to have needs to move up a notch. A generation ago, it would have been, gee, there are no black players. Bill Russell and a handful in the NBA. And then you moved it up a notch to where there were black coaches, Casey Jones being one of them. But then it has to go to the general manager, president, and owner level.
Okay, so the NFL institutes a policy called the Rooney Rule.
Right.
Which, by rule, if you're hiring a new coach, you have got to consider head coaches of color as part of your interview process. That's what we call affirmative action.
Right.
What is your take on affirmative action?
Affirmative action, my take is this, and I discuss it in the book. And the reason I discuss it is this. I believe that unless there's some kind of intentionality to hiring for diversity, there will not be much diversity at all in many workplaces and offices. My older brother, Jim, who was an executive with Miller Brewing, and I would have conversations. He was the liberal. I was the conservative. He sort of turned me to the dark side a little because of the fact that he would say, look, people tend to hire people like themselves. And he was high enough up on the corporate ladder that he knew that there were levels he couldn't get to because he'd have to belong to the same country clubs. Those opportunities were not there for many blacks. And so as a result of that, he and I would have conversations about opportunity tied to the fact that people hire people of the same education level and many times, unfortunately, the same race. And because of that, I think that factors into this. How would I use the term black a lot. How would a black person crack into certain social institutions unless they had someone who introduced them in? Because I just believe that it's not a thing where people are sitting there and they're going, gee, I look around this workplace, there's not a lot of African Americans or Hispanics. We need to do something about that. That was the attitude in the 60s with affirmative action. That was the attitude in the 70s, maybe into the 80s. And then some of the Supreme Court decisions, the Bakke case and others, turned that to where now people are afraid that they're going to be sued by qualified white candidates if they bend over backwards and they try to equalize things and make their company, make their executive room more diverse.
You know, I do life coaching as well as this quality radio program. And I have two life coaches. I think everybody's got coaches in their life, whether they call themselves coaches or not. We all mm-hmm. need them. Even Michael Jordan needed a life coach, or an actual coach, I should say, in Phil Jackson. One of my coaches has a great phrase. He says, why, the question why, is the only question that blinds the eye. Ultimately, it really doesn't make a difference why the African-American community finds itself where it is and the country vis-a-vis race right now. The mm-hmm. question isn't why. The question is, what do we do about it?
Right.
Because we've got a problem. Yeah. And so we have to do things about it on purpose. Like, I'm not holding myself up as any paragon of virtue, believe me. I sound like Donald Trump there. Believe me. But I am holding up a perspective. And the perspective is, I'm having this conversation with Milton Thompson on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
What a concept to actually take on the issue headlong and to start discussing it on a regular, consistent, persistent basis. Obviously, one of the things that we need to do is have leaders in the African-American community approach things in a different way than people like Jesse Jackson have and Al Sharpton has. One of the biggest shames, in my opinion, other than the crimes that Bill Cosby committed, which is at the head of the list, he was one of the only prominent African-American men who was standing up and saying, we have to take responsibility for our own community. We have to be responsible for the children that we bring into our lives. And of course, that message, which is a very viable, vital message, mm-hmm. completely gets lost because of what he did as a man.
Yeah, that's true. And part of the reason why we need to have more African-Americans, especially African-American males, speak out is people, both within the community and outside the community, need to understand that there's a diversity of opinion on a lot of things. There's Ben Carson, there's Clarence Thomas, there's Al Sharpton, there's Jesse Jackson, there's President Obama, and there's everybody in between. And so I think what will help the conversation on race is for people to hear enough voices to know there are black conservatives, there are black liberals, there are blacks floating in between those two positions. There are blacks who, you know, are highly religious, who are Christians, who have dynamic faith. And there are blacks who, unfortunately, in my opinion, you know, have no religious or faith background at all. But people need to hear all of those voices so that they understand that even when it comes to economic policy and other things, blacks are not monolithic. We don't all think the same. Again, in my family, I have two liberal brothers, two what you would call conservative brothers. And when we talk politics and things, there's a lot of sparks flying. But we like that because we were taught by our parents to think for ourselves. And I think that people need to see a lot more of that in the black community and to hear a lot more of that.
Unfortunately, there are not a lot of media outlets that will allow African-American men and women who are conservative to speak. I mean, you see him on Fox. You see Dr. Ben Carson on Fox. You see Alan West on Fox.
Right.
You see Herman Cain on Fox.
Right.
You see Milwaukee County Sheriff
David
Clark on Fox, but you don't see them on CNN too much. You don't see them on MSNBC. And it's almost as if the white power brokers in those areas, in those media outlets, are trying to keep, if may I say this, the African-American population on the plantation.
And it's funny, Alan West has used that phrase, and his belief is that If you stray from certain opinions, if you're not in line completely with the Democratic Party and with liberalism as a black person, what will happen is you will be minimized and you'll be censured, which always is comical to me because liberalism always promotes itself as being the paragon, the champion of all causes of people of color. But it appears, and it's my opinion, that people of color who don't deviate from the given perspective or the acceptable perspective. So I would agree with you on that. And the unfortunate thing is there aren't a lot of, Juan Williams comes to mind, who's on Fox, and Juan is a Democrat and Juan tends to be liberal. But there really aren't a lot of black media role models who represent a diversity of opinion, especially once you leave Fox and you go to CNN and CNBC. You just don't see a lot of them.
Juan Williams is a liberal. He is a Democrat, but he's reasonable.
Yes.
He gets along. He has friends. If you work at Fox, you better have an ability to be friends with Republicans and conservatives.
Yeah.
And we don't see a lot of that. One of the things I like about Donna Brazile, who has taken over the as a chairperson for the Democratic National Committee, is she's very much a Hillary Clinton supporter, very liberal, but she's a decent person. She goes out of her way to be reasonable in the media. Mm-hmm. And we have to have people who will reach out. Harold Ford, the former congressman from North Carolina, he's that way. He's on MSNBC all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He seems very reasonable. But we have to have the white media moguls reach out to the other side of the aisle in the African-American community to have the entire picture.
No, that's true. And you know, hopefully in time that will happen. Unfortunately, right now, it happens rarely. It happens rarely, and unfortunately, it distorts the view of what African Americans believe. You know, there are African Americans who are just as shocked at riots. There are African Americans who, it's been a while, but in the OJ case, thought he was guilty as sin.
Right from the get-go.
You know, right from the get-go. It wasn't, you know, they didn't have the attitude of, OJ's a brother. We got to back him no matter what. You know, it was, no, he's guilty as sin. You know, even though the gloves didn't fit and all of that, you know. We represent a wide variety of viewpoints on a lot of things, but they're not heard that often. You're right. The media tends to skew us. If we're liberal, we get a platform. If we're not liberal, we don't get the same kind of platform. Or we're vilified. You know,
Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom, and it's funny. Sometimes the white media calls a person like, or by their treatment of a Clarence Thomas, they're calling him an Uncle Tom, as well as blacks who believe that he sold out to white people and he's an Uncle Tom. So there's a subtlety to all of this that unfortunately forces many black people, who, especially those that are moderate or conservative, to live life on the down low, to fly beneath the radar screen. If you ask them their opinion on something, some of them will never voice that they've ever voted Republican or anything else, because they know that the backlash is more than they want to take from members of the community.
Excuse me. Had a sneeze. So I did. Well, we are excited to specifically give you the voice and to continue the conversation. This is going to be ongoing, beautiful humans. He's Milton Thompson. He'll be back. He's the only one in the room. That's the book, A Lifetime of Observations on Race. Great seeing you. We'll see you towards the end of the week, if not sooner.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. This is Glenn Klein on WRJ, and it's 28 minutes until 11 o'clock. The great Tom Carco is standing by in the News Center with the WRJM News Block coming next.
Killarney Court is your senior living home in Sturtevant. They're dedicated to enhancing the quality.